Hello there, this is Dave Allen, Wizard Gold, and you're listening to the Mach 20 Cube podcast. This is the podcast where we talk to Mac users about what they actually do with their Macs and their iOS devices. None of those silly rumours. So let's jump right into this podcast, and we're talking to Bob Middleton, who's an American living in Japan, and we have a good chat about various bits and pieces, and I think you're going to enjoy this one. So let's get on with the podcast. Hello and good morning.
Good morning.
So tell me, how long have you been in Japan anyway?
Over 20 years now.
Goodness me, that's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been quite a while, and it's been a pleasant time, good time.
So how did you get out there in the first place?
I met my wife in the States when she was over, and we hit it off, and we decided on where we would like to live, and I said, I'll give Japan a look and see. And 20 years later, here we are.
So you're a souvenir from the United States then?
Well... The booby prize, perhaps.
Well, I'm the same sort of thing here in Catalonia. I'm a souvenir.
Is that so?
Yeah, I'm a souvenir from Ireland.
What I like about your show is that you talk about workflows and that with your guests. Yeah, that's one of the things that's interesting for me.
Well, there's too many shows out there that are sort of news-based, and then they don't talk about any news. All they talk about is rumours, and that just bugs me.
You're right, right. And it doesn't always help us figure out how to solve things and how to get things done, you know.
Okay, so let's talk about stuff then. So let's get further down to the nitty gritty of it. And what sort of Mac and Apple's hardware and software are you using now?
I am on a 2011 iMac. I got that just a few years back when it was probably about a year old. And also, one of the computers I use mainly at work is still a MacBook.
That's good that you can use them at work as well.
Well, you know, I take it in and out of school because the computers at school are Windows machines, and everything is in Japanese on them, of course. So my Japanese isn't that good to feel comfortable working in, you know, software. At that level.
I suppose it's a bit difficult for reading with these different characters and so on. And the extent of my Japanese doesn't go any further than konnichiwa.
Yeah. Well, that'll get you a long way, you know. No, for one, I was never a Windows user. And even if I had a book or a guide next to me, it would just be constantly going back and forth. So I started off with a Mac, and for my wife and I, that machine was bilingual in the beginning, and that was a plus. Mm-hmm. The way the software was installed, you know.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, when I get to work here, I have to put up with a Windows machine as well. So.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
But I have to deal with it in Spanish. So.
Well. So you can understand, sure. It's hard enough as it is in English, you know.
Mm. Well, when people come here to Spain and they're just sort of learning the language, I mean, the first thing that everyone has to learn is dos cervezas, por favor.
Oh, yeah.
And how do you say two beers, please, in Japanese?
let's see, that would be biru, nippon kudasai. That'd be two bottles of beer.
Very good. There we go. A bit of education on this show as well. So you've got this MacBook that you work as well. So what do you do with this MacBook?
Well, one thing that we're doing is making a lot of flashcards and materials for the classroom. I'm a teaching assistant here, and there are textbooks to use, but the schools don't tend to use the commercial English textbooks. So we do a lot of homemade and homegrown materials here.
That's good.
And, and the program that we're in calls for that. So there's just a lot of need to make flashcards and worksheets and posters and everything to support what we're doing in the class.
So if you're liking a lot of flashcards, are you sort of basing a lot of lessons on sort of memory sort of learning, where they have to sort of basically use these flashcards to memorize English words?
Well, right. That's to assist in the learning. And they're just so easy to for kids. We're teaching elementary school kids. It's just so attractive for kids to see color photographs of animals or photographs from countries, or if we're talking about food, to get, you know, photographs from the internet that, you know, illustrate the words we're trying to teach.
I suppose sometimes you could quite easily have a picture on one side and then they guess a word which is kind of fits with the photograph, but another word on the other side is not quite what they were supposed to get to.
Oh, that's right. But that is a very good way to go about it when you're teaching reading. Yeah. You know, interesting enough, we do have iPads at school.
That's good.
And that's just come in recently. Yeah. We've only got about 12, but I find that the teachers are using them more like they're using them as like a photo album. So as the kids are talking, they're showing pictures and flashing through them. So we're not into using any kind of software in English yet on the iPads.
Because there's a flashcard type application that you can use. It's made by Evernote, I believe. And you can put sort of pictures in there, and you sort of lift one part of the cover up, and then it gives you sort of the hook to get into the next part of it, and you have to guess what's being hidden.
Oh, right. That sounds great. That would be Evernote.
Yeah, it's made by Evernote. I can't remember the name of the application now, but I did hear about it, and it's something that could be used. And yeah. In terms of using iPads in schools, there's that fella, what's his name, Spears, I can't remember his first name. Fraser Spears, yeah. I mean, he's got this thing where he's got one-to-one going with his school in Cedars School in Scotland. And you should have a look at what he's doing with the iPads there, because I'm sure he'll be able to punch in the right direction.
Well, that does sound like something that would be interesting. You know what happens, though, when a lot of the information for that is in English, it doesn't really reach Japan. It's really got to come through Japan channels. And what I mean by that is teachers they're not paying attention to what you and I might be paying attention to as far as this goes in English. So there's a little bit of a gap, I believe, there.
Okay, well, it's good.
No, we've got this. Yeah, we've got this great fella in Fraser Spears, but that's never going to reach a Japanese audience until it's translated. You know.
Yeah, and the teachers that you work with, I mean, do they sort of listen to what ideas that you've got and say, oh, "Let's give this a try"?
Yeah, they're good. They're very good about that.
And the kids in the school, when they're using the iPads, I mean, they enjoy it, obviously. I'd imagine they enjoy it.
It right off the bat, it's really something to see them having a good time, flipping through pages. They have a sense of how they work, even though most of them don't have them at school. And it's really something to see. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with the iPad, really. I mean, it's kind of one of these personal sort of things where you sort of got it in your hands and you're sort of, it's more tactile and you can really sort of get into it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I wish we had, you know, 30 of them, one for each child in the classroom. Yeah. But hopefully in the future, you know.
Is it a big school you're in?
Yeah, it's about 600-700 kids. Is that big? I don't know.
Well, I suppose it's fairly big, yeah.
In the particular town, there's one elementary school and one junior high. So the kids will move, they'll move right through school pretty much all together as they go up through to the next level of schooling.
So when you're going out to buy your Apple gear there, I mean, is there an Apple store near you that you can go into and get your stuff?
There is a large city called Nagoya, and that's about 2 hours away. It's not that convenient to go in. In fact, you probably won't believe it, I've been in an Apple store once since I've been here.
Gosh, that's not very often. So what do you do when you want to buy your stuff? Do you get it online from the online store, maybe?
Online has been the best way recently. But back when I bought my first gear, I was introduced to a fella, a Japanese fella here who was bilingual, and he was just an Apple, independent Apple dealer at the time. And he supplied equipment to the universities and so on. And this fella was a one-man show, and he was fantastic. You'd go to his shop, and anything you wanted to know, he'd take the time to really put you at ease and explain anything you wanted to know. And I bought my first few machines from him.
And is he not there working still in the war?
The last one was the Cube.
That's going back a bit.
And the Cube was, yeah, you remember the Cube?
Not really. G4. That's why it's going back a bit. I don't remember it.
Oh, okay. Well, it was a beautiful, beautiful object. And the cats used to love to sleep on it, on the top. But unfortunately, we get a lot of lightning in the mountains here. And I think the electric line got zapped one afternoon. And that was the end of the Cube.
Yeah, we have a similar sort of problem here. I have to get all the computers turned off when there's a storm here. I've lost a couple of the routers on the but and I think a phone got zapped as well. But so far the computer's been okay.
Well, the same. Is there anything that would help that?
Well, you can get surge protectors, and they do the job if you get a decent one.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you buy a decent surge protector as well, what you get as well is you get protection in the form of insurance. So if it does get past the surge protector, they will give you some sort of thing back for the thing that got busted.
Okay, I see.
But what I've got on mine is I've got a UPS on my computers. And so I think that gives some protection as well.
Okay. And you get it often enough so that you're pulling out your plugs during the storm time and you're taking a precaution as it is. I hated to lose the machine, but it moved us on to the next one, I guess. But getting back to where we get them, online has been fine, and our delivery systems work wonderfully here. So you order it online, and the support staff at Apple is bilingual, and they can help you out with anything you need, and that's worked out well.
So let's say, what's your typical day when you're using your Mac stuff then?
Well, open it up in the morning, and one of the first, take a look at what kind of materials we might be needing in the week ahead. And a program I really like to use is OmniGraffle.
Okay.
You familiar with it?
I've seen it. I've not actually sort of used it.
It's part of that Omni group in the United States, which makes OmniFocus and so on.
I am an OmniFocus user. I've got it on my iPhone, my iPad, and also my Mac, and it's a terribly expensive program, but worth having.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So is an OmniGraffle. But what it does for, saving stencils and saving templates of things that you make over and over again, and being able to manipulate graphics in the program and put the layout and design just so, seems to really work well for me. So for example, I'll take a list of a dozen cards that I need to make. I'll make a list, and I'll go and gather my images off the internet, and I'll bring them in here and just keep repeating the and change the fonts to any size I want, depending on the grade, and keep duplicating the card over and over again. And I can quickly go from making a large flash card to making a set of smaller Trump size cards. And it's all very easy to do in the program.
So you're using the computer there for your work stuff.
Yeah.
Other applications as well that you use for work?
A recent one I've been using is, it's called Swift Publications.
Okay, I've not heard of that one.
Okay, the company name is Be Light. And I think one of your programs years ago, you introduced me to a program called Art Text.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like that. I still use it. I used it yesterday, in fact.
Okay. I believe it's the same company. And they have a program that they say is similar to Pages, but they just have different templates and different kinds of programs, templates in the program, I'm sorry, that you can create, again, any kind of card, any kind of a graphic you need. One thing I really like about them, they also sell a clip art kit. And the clip art is very good for a software program.
That's cool. I'll tell you something I was just looking at as well this morning. Is, you were the winner of the Amadeus Pro that was given away there.
Yeah, that's
how are you getting on with Amadeus Pro?
You know, what I'll do with that is I bring in recordings of the kids. We set up a small little recorder on the desk, and we want to know how well they're doing with an activity. I'll set up a little recorder on the desk and take it off of the small recorder, bring it in and put it in Amadeus Pro and edit out all the background noise or whatever and get the smaller clips all lined up. It's all very easy. Good program.
You could use that to Amadeus Pro to record them sort of speaking and practicing their stuff and then play it back to them. Would they get some benefit out of that, do you think?
I think they really would. And it's a very good idea. I wish we did more of it. But mostly the recordings are for the benefit of the research we're doing to listen to what they're saying and get it down on paper so we can compare notes at our teachers' meetings.
Do you know, it kind of takes me back to when I was at school many, many, many years ago.
Uh-huh.
And there was a language lab. And in this language lab, they had whole bunch of cubicles. I mean, it was state of the art at the time. It really was.
Right.
Each had cubicles, and you put these headphones on, and you had a microphone, and you did these exercises and spoke into it, and so on. And the teacher sort of sat at the front and was able to listen to various cubicles who was doing what and talking and stuff. And it was kind of interesting, I suppose, looking back at it. Really, it was quite amazing. I mean, obviously, it was tape based and everything like that. Those sort of days.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's gone out of favour now. I mean, really, it's because it was sort of very individual sort of based because she was inside a cubicle with headphones on and stuff.
Right.
Whereas now it'd be more like you sort of sit around in a group and sort of have actually sort of one face-to-face sort of practice, sort of talking to each other.
Yeah, that's true. But I believe there are, in the higher levels, there are still some language labs around, and because they were quite an investment, if you think about it. So many of the... when it was popular, many of the schools in around the world kept going with them, you know. But technology is changing, and yeah, you're right. It's easier and cheaper to, you know, bring in a small flash recorder or tell people to put some files on an iPod and carry it with you anywhere. Of course, we can't do that with the younger ones, but... for people who are...
So what age are the kids that you teach then?
The age I'm involved with is about 9 to 12.
Okay. That's not a bad age because they're quite interested in stuff at that age, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. Some of them I've seen I've seen since kindergarten, though. So we in classes I taught a few years back, I taught grades from kindergarten right through junior high. So we kind of grew up together. And that was a lot of fun to watch their progress.
Yeah, it's always kind of nice. I used to be a teacher a long time ago as well. I was I was an art teacher for 4 years.
Oh, fantastic!
And recently, I've been doing something similar to what you're doing. I was in a school in Banyoles, which is not too far away from here.
I see.
And I was supposed to go in there as an assistant, mm-hmm. but the way they worked it is that the teacher says, "Okay, right, you have half the class, and I'll have the other half of the class." And so I was in the class to myself, really. It was a bit different.
Good for you. Well, that is good. And you had a really generous teacher there.
Well, it was okay, yeah. And the way I worked it is that I like the sort of using mind maps and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And I did this thing where, in fact, it connects with you in a little way, actually, because I says, okay, kids, we've got these words and I want you to learn them and remember them. They're English words.
Right.
And so we did this sort of little story. And we said, OK, well, this guy's got an itchy knee. And we follow this story through. And says, and by the way, at the end of it, you've actually learned how to count 1 to 10 in Japanese.
Oh.
So it was the itch, knee, sanshi and all the rest of it. So I had this little story and they sort of, I was trying to get them into the idea where they could use stories like that to learn sort of a whole lot of things without... without having to sort of really sort of tax their memory sort of brain cells too much.
Yeah. Wonderful idea. I'm sure they remember it today.
Well, actually, I mean, there was like about a week later. I mean, one of the little lads came up to me. I mean, I said, little lads, I mean, it must have been about 12 or something like that, maybe 11, 12. And I still remember that, and he sort of reeled it all off for me, you know.
That's one of the joys that you get out of it.
Yeah.
After a few years, somebody comes back and you have a conversation with them and you say, yeah, I guess we did something right there.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Well, I was using the mind mapping. I mean, obviously, because I'd got a board there, they got Windows computers in the classroom and they were kind of all tied and locked down and everything. I was using my iPad in the class, but I couldn't get the iPad to connect up to the overhead projector. So I was basically having to sort of use it as a sort of a display thing, because it was a small class. I could do that, but the big class I couldn't.
Okay.
But it was handy. I could wander around the class as well and show one particular student something on the iPad, or I could I had it so that the volume of the iPad was loud enough so I could play audio clips out of it as well. It was quite useful that way.
Sounds good. So did you figure out how to connect it to the projector?
Well, if I'd have been there longer, I probably could have worked out something. What I would have done is I would have taken in an Apple TV and I would have been able to sort of airplay into the Apple TV and then onto the iPad, onto the projector. That's what I would like to have done, but I wasn't there for long enough to be able to do it. I was there a period of 14, 16 weeks, something like that. So
I see. So that Apple TV would need a Wi-Fi connection to bridge the two.
Don't think you actually need a Wi-Fi. I mean, I think you can connect directly from the iPad to the Apple TV without having to actually have an extra Wi-Fi sort of generally permeating the area, as it were, you know?
Okay.
I can't remember now. It's a while since I've did it, you know? I've done it, you know?
Yeah. What I did this year, in fact, I had a lot of keynote presentations for the kids. We were in a sixth grade class. We were studying World Heritage Sites. So I was bringing my MacBook into class and just hooking it directly to the projector. And that worked out pretty well. Although a lot of kids were looking over my shoulder to just look at the MacBook screen instead of the projection up on the blackboard.
Well, I mean, kids always look for the easiest way of doing stuff.
But, you know, it's still so much of a novelty to have a projected image on the screen. I mean, when I was in school, that was a big day when the teacher would bring in the projector with the 16-millimeter film on it or a film strip. And it's just very, very easy to bring images and sound into the classroom these days.
Well, over in the UK, what they do is they have these interactive blackboards, as it were.
Right.
Blackboards or whiteboards, whatever you want to call them. But actually, they're totally electronic, and they I don't know how they work. I haven't seen them in action myself, but they connect up to them, and they've got these just about in every classroom in the UK.
Oh, my goodness. That's quite extensive, then. We have something similar here, and the trouble with it is it kind of traps the computer room. So it's really only used for the computer room instruction. And even though the computers are you know, they're very useful, of course, in the room, they're all locked down to the desks. And I think we're kind of old-fashioned in that regard. I'd like to see a little more modern computer lab for the kids, you know.
Well, it'd be kind of nice with a sort of interactive whiteboard on the front of the class, if every class had one. It'd be great if you could, and each student had an iPad as well.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, well, what we want to do is, okay, little Johnny over there, I want you to send what you've got on your iPad and put it up to the on the board so everyone can have a look at it now.
There you go.
That'd be great. Or even have it so that you could sort of have a number of these sort of up on the screen at the same time. And then you can have a couple of class discussions. Okay, well, John's done it this way, Freddie's done it this way, and the child has done it this way. Which way do you think works best, sort of thing, you know? And you could have and really sort of get into it, couldn't you?
Right. And I think that is coming. I hear a lot about that on different programs. And I think that will come as the younger teachers start coming in who are a little more comfortable doing all that. I don't find the older teachers doing that as much. And that's where I don't know about in Spain or in the States, but the technology is a little scary.
Yeah.
For the older one, you know?
Well, when I was working in the school, I was quite amused one day. There was the staff room, as it were, and there was a teacher in there putting together some class materials, and she was actually got the paper and scissors and glue out, and she was sticking things together. And I was thinking, gosh, what an old-fashioned way of doing stuff. I mean, wouldn't it be better to sort of, you know, get this picture, sort of edit it digitally on your iPad or your computer, whatever else, put it together, and, you know, it's so much easier to make a collage of what she was doing digitally rather than actually sort of getting the old-fashioned ways of things of doing it. And obviously, after that, she had to go and photocopy these things to be able to spread them out and give them bits of paper out of them.
I think that's an excellent point. I see that day in and day out. There's an old kind of holdover from the word processor days before the PC, and it's called it's a program like Microsoft Word called Ichitaro in Japan, and Ichitaro was able to do the the vertical writing up and down that Chinese and Japanese uses. And many teachers who first learned how to use a Word Pro continue to use it on their programs, and the younger generation is, of course, using Microsoft Word very comfortably, but the older teachers still hang on to that Ichitaro and just have never learned another way to word process, you know?
Mm. I'm not a big fan of Microsoft Word myself. I like to get in there and do everything with basic plain text.
Plain text? Yep. Is that
well,
so?
Well, I use Markdown. Have you heard of Markdown?
Yeah, I have heard of it, but I don't know what the advantages are for the average guy on the street.
Well, the basics of it with Markdown is that it's plain text, and it's not going to be something that, say, in 10 years' time, it's going to be out of date, as it were, you know? Whereas, say, you try and open up a WordPerfect file from however many years ago, you'd hardly be able to do it, you know? It wouldn't be possible because there's so much junk in thrown in with it as well because of all the sort of formatting and whatever else. And so I forgot what his name is, Gruber. Yeah, John Gruber. So he invented this sort of Markdown language, and it's been extended now to this. There's another level of Markdown as well. And basically you can write in text, and you've got you have two hash symbols or pound signs, as they call them in the US, to notate the level of the heading. So two if it's level two. And basically, if you want to sort of put it into a rich text document, you can export it out of that as HTML, and you've got rich text.
Oh, okay.
And while it's still in Markdown, it's still just text, and it's still perfectly readable, and you can also see where things are in bold. If you use an application like Byword, for instance, which is for writing in text, it actually sort of gives you extra hints so that if you've put something in bold, you'll actually see the bold. It'll bolden up the text as well. And it's just the ease of it, really. And I've got this little system as well where I've got using Text Expander.
Okay.
So if I want to put a link into it, I select the words that I want to use to put a link, and I hit the square bracket key, the open square bracket key, and that puts square brackets around the whole of it. So it puts one on the front and the back of it. And then I do a left square bracket, a right square bracket, put a number in between. I go to the end of the paragraph because I like to do reference links rather than the inline links, because it again makes it more readable. So at the end of the paragraph, what I do then is I use Text Expander. I type in MDL, which means Markdown link, which is my Text Expander sort of trigger keyword, as it were. I type in the number that I've already put in the in between the two square brackets after my link, and the job's done. So it's a really quick way of putting links in. I find it's brilliant.
Well, it sounds like a good idea to keep things from going out of date. I like that, because I've run into that with even using a similar software where it'll upgrade and then it doesn't open the old file styles anymore. One that comes to mind is, are you familiar with a company called Comic Life?
Yes.
they are, you know, they make a frame, a comic book frame that you can insert pictures and so on. It's another good one to for creating a dialogue or a small booklet for kids. And they don't change very often, but when they do upgrade, sometimes they won't open their old files, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, you think you'd have some sort of backwards compatibility, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It's a good application, that is. I could see that being really useful in a school.
It is. That's a really good one, I think. I use that quite a bit, actually. And the recent edition has an area where you can type in the script. And all you need to do is type in or import your script, and it'll block it out into comic book style. And then all you need to do is add your artwork.
I haven't tried that. I must give that a try. That sounds really fun.
It's kind of leading us in a new direction, but I've been fooling around with some of the manga and comic book software recently, and some of the stuff they're offering is really something for, you know, using graphics and putting artwork together, or making vector graphics.
Okay, which application do you use for the vector graphics then?
Well, I'm all over the board on that, David, because Illustrator I never got a handle on, and now it's what is it, subscription? Yep. Or can you still buy it? I don't know.
I think it might still be possible to buy a version of its outright, as it were, but they have gone subscription. And the application that I'd recommend for that using on the Mac at the moment is Affinity Designer.
Affinity Designer, okay.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's still a bit early on in its sort of stage. It's quite a new application, and I've been testing it out recently. I mean, it is fantastic. It really is good. There's a couple of little things that they haven't got in there.
Right.
That are little things, but you know, when they're working on them, they're going to be. I got onto them of the fact that when you've got an object within a graphic, as it were,
okay,
you might want to do a rotation of it. Now, the moment when you rotate it, it rotates just around its center point. Now, it stands to reason that when you're making a graphic, quite often you're going to want to sort of move that center point around, whether it be inside within the object or even moving the center point to its outside of the object.
Okay.
So you can rotate it around and a different center point altogether. And they are going to make that change at some point in time. I've spoken to about it, and they're going to come up with it. And that's the little thing. But apart from that, I think it's a brilliant application. And it sort of takes me back to the ease of use that I used to get out of the PC vector graphic app, which was CorelDRAW, which I was an expert in.
Okay, so you did, yeah, okay. I played around a bit with Corel, but never got the hang of it. And it took me a long time to figure out what vector graphics were going to be useful for compared to, what's the other kind?
Bitmaps.
Okay. You know, because I have some art background myself, and would like to create stuff that I'm actually just drawing and then scanning in, and resizing and being able to color and everything is really useful. So I've been kind of looking for.
Okay, well, if you go in that direction, well, what you're bringing in is going to be a bitmap. But obviously, some of these applications, what you can do is you have tracing. Facilities where it will trace whatever bitmap you brought in,
okay.
But you need to have something that is sort of fairly sort of distinct in its sort of shapes and everything like that. You know, you're sort of fairly sort of simple colours, not too many colours in it, otherwise you'll get quite confused. There's a Corel Trace used to do that, something like
Corel
that.
Corel Trace.
I think there are other ones, Corel Trace, yeah. And there are other applications that do something similar now. I can't remember if Affinity Designer does anything like that, but I mean, obviously what you can do, if it's a fairly simple thing anyway, is you can get the tool out where you draw individual nodes, you draw a line, and you use the Bezier curves to follow it round. And Affinity Designer does a pretty good job of that.
Okay.